It has been a long and interesting week. I spoke with Pulitzer Prize-winning author Edward Larson. We talked about how recycling will change in Atlanta, and we heard some great Georgia authors. But as we do every Friday, it is time to gather a group of smart people to kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened. It's time for The Break Room.
Despite an electorate that's becoming less religious, Congress is still quite faithful, with nearly the same percentage of members who identify as Christian today as they were in the 1960s.
Well, regardless of good intentions, and Cinnabon clearly feels badly about this and intended to do the right thing and give tribute, well, it's just not appropriate.
Demand for assisted living and nursing care wasn't high until foreigners, many of them Americans, flocked here.
In the studio today, Hector Fernandez, a professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University. Sumaya Khalifa is here. She's the executive director of the Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta. Natalie Pavelski makes her return appearance, vice president for Cater Communications. And we're joined again by journalist and former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr. Welcome, everybody. Happy Friday.
Good morning.
As long as everyone survives the expected snow, that is, I certainly hope. But in any case, let's launch right into it, because there is a national debate going on about lying at the moment. The Washington Post has created a fact checker app you can download to your smartphone to fact check the president-elect's tweets. And over the weekend on NBC's Meet the Press, Wall Street Journal editor-in-chief Gerard Baker said he is very careful about using the word lie.
Lie implies much more than just saying something that's false. It implies a deliberate intent to mislead. When Donald Trump says thousands of people were on the rooftops of New Jersey on 9/11 celebrating, thousands of Muslims were there celebrating, I think it's right to investigate that claim, to report what we found, which is that nobody found any evidence of that whatsoever, and to say that.
So this has sparked a big debate, especially among journalists, but among the public as well. Some people among the public say, look, we expect journalists to tell us somebody's lying. What do we all think here? Does it need to be called a lie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Celeste, back when I was at CNN, this is a real change for me, because back when I was at CNN, I would have not called anything a lie, and I would have not have been allowed to do that. You would present the facts and apparent contradictions and let the viewers make up their mind. But we're in a different era now. We have news outlets that don't distinguish between opinion and news. And we have a president-elect with a really strange relationship to the truth. And if you...
That's a way to put it.
I mean, it's one thing if you get it wrong, right? Everybody gets things wrong. But if you repeat something time and time again, after it's been debunked, at a certain point, the media's got to call them on it. Call it disinformation, propaganda, lies, but you got to call them on it.
Absolutely. I totally agree. You know, he is not a private citizen anymore to speak whatever he wants to speak or lie whatever he wants to lie.
Fair point.
He is the president of the United States, soon to be. Also, the repercussions of his lies. You know, this report that we just heard, when he said that Muslims were cheering 9/11, there is a backlash to that community. So his lies or his untruth carry weight, both as a president-elect and back to communities that he, you know, chooses to single out.
Yeah, and his own supporter debunked that. The governor of New Jersey debunked that,
right,
as well.
Yeah. And it's well, because he was worried about his reputation of his state.
Yeah.
But I think it's also particularly egregious because he keeps repeating, Trump keeps repeating things that have been proven to be false. And so if he's going to do that, we need to say it's false.
And ask him at press conferences.
But saying it's false is what media outlets are doing right now. Hector, do we need to call them lies then?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's the media's responsibility to distinguish between factual information and what happens to be basically your opinion. And I disagree with what they said with respect to intentionality. You might not have intentionality, but if you say something that is not true, somebody has to point it out, and regardless of
but
whether
the dictionary
whether you
definition
know it or not,
of lie is intentionally making an
I mean, it's still a lie.
Well,
I mean,
but you have to say Trump is also calling reporters and news outlets liar. He just said the news outlets lie. So if he's saying the news outlets lie, cannot news outlets say no, he is lying?
Yeah, because in 140 characters, you can't say, I don't think this is quite correct. You say lie. So if he's going to do it.
Or false.
Well, this is a great one for listeners to weigh in on. And you know how to reach us. Tweet us at OST Talk or post on Facebook. There's also a debate going on right now over when a joke is appropriate or inappropriate. Actress and author Carrie Fisher died, as we all, many of us know, just after Christmas. Best known for starring as Princess and General, I might add, Leia, in the Star Wars film series.
You know, no matter how much we fought, I've always hated watching you leave. That's why I did it. So you'd miss me.
That lays all for Klimt. After Carrie Fisher's death last month, the company Cinnabon tweeted a photo, a drawing actually, of Leia with Cinnabon rolls representing her very iconic hairstyle in Star Wars. That was accompanied by this following message, quote, RIP Carrie Fisher, you'll always have the best buns in the galaxy, end quote. The company caught a lot of flack for that. They claimed the tweet was offensive. Was it?
Absolutely. It's in poor taste. It's also poor marketing. I mean, and despite the fact that we have a president-elect that, you know, thinks all attention is good attention, that's not so.
I don't think the tweet was particularly offensive. I may be the only one here, but I think that Carrie Fisher had a great sense of humor, and she would have probably appreciated it. She would have probably retweeted it.
She probably would have.
First of all, it's not even cinnamon buns. But it's bagels. Well, she has bagels on the side.
I also believe, though, that the timing was really bad. I mean, I think it was probably
too soon.
Yeah, in poor taste of that. But I think it was not the worst thing ever.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got outrage fatigue. I'm mad at so much of what's going on in the world that this is relatively minor. And Carrie Fisher embraced her sexuality and used it as a tool in her work, and appropriately so. But she was also a feminist. And she spoke about how she hated wearing that ridiculous slave girl bikini and how great it was to strangle Jabba. And so I think this was insanely tone deaf, especially after the epic year of sexism we've just been through.
So Maya is abstaining.
No. I thought it was kind of clever to do that, but at the same time, I felt like it was in very poor taste using death to kind of market their products.
Okay. One last thing here for the moment is the idea of women-only social clubs, because remember, it wasn't all that long ago that men-only social clubs were the norm.
I wanted to call it the man nest.
Yep, pretty much anything goes up here. Nothing too gross or too scary. Come on, guys. Just because girls aren't allowed in the guy scraper doesn't mean Chelsea can't be here.
Yes, it does.
All right, there's now a lot of women-only things. We've talked about them before. One new one is called The Wing. It opened in New York City. It features amenities like a lactation room, makeup on demand, and it's an office space for women only. What do we think?
It's women learning to play by the rules of the good old boys network, because they need to do it in others in a way such that they can beat them.
Yes.
And I'll clarify, I do not agree with things like single gender education, but I'll be the first one to admit that sometimes they fulfill, you know, a purpose. I mean, stats show that single gender education, women perform better academically speaking. So,
subject areas. Yeah, Natalie?
Yeah, well, I've been looking at some co-working spaces, and I go in, and it's either, you know, kind of vaguely depressing corporate light with escapees from corporate America, or it's like
fluorescent light. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I do. And or guys with these really scary beards talking about disrupting this and hackathoning
that. Scary beards, okay.
But I read about this, and it's like, oh my God, it's my tribe. These are women with jobs. We're plenty busy, thank you very much, but we occasionally like to break for latte, and we love to be able to get a blowout at work. I mean, this sounds like heaven to me.
But Kathy, you think it's too expensive?
I think it's way too expensive. So who are you getting? It's $185 a month, this particular club. But the thing is that women's clubs were established at a time when women were not accepted in men's clubs.
There's still lots of clubs where they're not accepted.
Yes,
though.
But I think
Augusta, hello.
Yes, but self-segregating, I guess it happens all the time. But I think, I don't know, maybe I'm so-so on this.
Well, I think that, you know, having options is great. So if somebody wants to go to a mixed club, that's fine. Or to go to the Wing is fine. I personally don't like the segregation. I like for men and women to be working together and cooperating throughout.
It's on Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. We are having coffee and conversation in the break room, as we do just about every Friday. My guests today are Natalie Pavelski of Cator Communications, former NPR correspondent and journalist Kathy Lohr, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, and Sumaya Khalifa of the Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta. And thank you, as we say every week, to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we drink, and it is delicious.
It is wonderful.
Online, right? Mm. They're online at savannahcoffee.com. Yeah, they save us from being that typical bad public radio coffee. Okay. Speaking of drink and food, I should say, food, I get, is very serious business here in the South. So there is some important breaking news. Gus's world-famous fried chicken has been dubbed best fried chicken in Atlanta. Hector already wants to go off on this. You can find it at the mall on Peachtree. Hector, what's...
I'm vegetarian, so I'll clarify that first of all. I mean, all fried chicken isn't healthy. That said, we live in a free country, so if you want to clog your arteries, be my guest.
More than that, we live in the South.
This is about the best fried chicken, yes. Not whether to eat fried chicken. Of course you're going to eat fried chicken.
It's all the same.
So Mike Rubio tweets, best fried chicken in Atlanta is Revival, hands down. So what? Anybody else had fried chicken that you think?
Table in Maine is pretty good. Mary Mac's is a traditional
Atlanta.
Well, that's
the standard.
Right. But I would like to try this. I have not tried it. I would definitely try it. There's also Smith House in Dahlonega. Anybody?
No. I'm liking the new South City Kitchen Buckhead with their chicken, but I have to say my mother-in-law has the best fried chicken in Atlanta, and I'm not just saying that because she's listening.
Yes, you are. Okay, it is the new year. Natalie's New Year's resolution is to compliment her mother-in-law. Some people,
obviously.
Some people, though, might have to make an important decision this year, and that is where to retire.
Just picking out the places I want to avoid when I sail across the world. I don't want to go to any poor places, you know? Successful guy like myself, I'll have a target on my back.
Okay, it turns out that a growing number of Americans are actually going around the world. According to the Social Security Administration, almost 400,000 American retirees are living outside the U.S. So, would you retire to a foreign country?
No.
No, why?
No. My husband and I had a long discussion about that, and we decided that being close to family and friends is more important.
Okay, than living in another place.
Yes.
But a lot of people say it's much cheaper.
And I think a lot of this discussion came out around the time of the Great Recession in 2007, 2008. I met a lot of people who said, I'm moving out of here. It's going to be cheaper. But they found out several people contacted me later and said, we didn't move to Costa Rica. It's not cheaper. The health care is not what we have here. I don't know. I think I would not move.
Costa Rica is really expensive. And if you travel, the more you travel, the more you realize the United States of America is the cheapest option.
Really? Well, yep. I mean, I understand the appeal. I mean, I think who can afford to retire here, right? I mean, the you know, there's a thing called the Economic Policy Institute. They say just under half of the households headed by somebody between the ages of 32 and 61 have nothing saved for retirement.
That is
zero
true.
Dollars.
That is true.
So if you don't have a lot of money, I can see the appeal of taking
of
it
going to like Germany where the health care is free.
Yeah, why not?
Or get a job at Walmart.
They're not going to take care of you to just land for your old age. I mean, it doesn't work that way.
No, you can't just get health care at the last minute.
In some countries, they don't even have, like, checkout counters at the hospitals, so they kind of take care of you.
Well, this is another one for our listeners as well, especially if you're getting close to retirement age and might have to make this decision. Would you retire outside a foreign country? I have to say, we had that conversation about a fried chicken, and Sam Burnham, our beloved Sam Burnham of All the Biscuits in Georgia blog, says, did you just say the best fried chicken in Atlanta is in a mall? Okay, I didn't, Sam. That was just named that, so don't blame me. On the subject, since we're talking about New Year's resolutions, the question is, do you still make them? Or is this kind of an old-fashioned tradition? Could you guys still make New Year's resolutions, and do you keep them?
I don't make resolutions because I've never been able to keep them before. So, and it was very stressful to make them and not be able to carry through. So I decided I'm just going to have a great time and be happy and do whatever I can. The pressure is off.
I do make resolutions, but I need deadlines with my resolutions.
Oh, well, you're a journalist.
I cannot. Yeah. If I just say I'm going to do something sometime this year, it doesn't happen that way.
What does that mean? No resolutions. Resolutions are for people with poor willpower, basically.
Oh,
that's not true.
Even I have resolved
that's
to give up making New Year's resolutions.
At Hector.com. Natalie, did you say you make resolutions?
I have resolved to give up making New Year's resolutions. This is a bad time of year for me to make decisions and like commitments. It's cold. It's gray. We have to take the Christmas tree down. The whole family's sick with the flu. I mean, it's just, you know, I do much better thinking when it's sunny.
Well, you can't think about improving your life when the weather is bad.
Pretty much.
Okay, we are hanging out in the break room this morning. With me is Natalie Pavelski of Cater Communications, Sumaya Khalifa of the Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, who gets all the complaint emails, and former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr. All right, let's talk about Congress. There are, in terms of percentages at least, more Christians in Congress than in the population that votes for them. According to the Pew Research Center, about 91% of Congress persons are professed Christians. That's about the same percentage that it was 50 years ago. But the U.S. citizenry, as we, most of us know, has changed dramatically. About 70% of adults say they're a Christian. A growing number of people, including millennials, say that they are atheist or non-religious. So why do we think that Congress is not actually more in line with the American population?
Who wants to go?
Wow, everyone's being polite
today.
Well, he's
getting all the complaints. We figure, you know, let him continue.
No, it's still the cultural tradition. I mean, it's going to percolate at some point. At some point, you know, the mainstream will be so secular that it's going to change. But at this point, the people coming to Congress still, you know, pertain to a certain social segment that, you know, just holds dearly onto something that perhaps is not very representative of our time and age.
And setting aside actual belief, because I don't think you can look in another person's heart and really see what they believe.
Right.
You know, this 20% or so of Americans who are nothing in particular, none of the above, I mean, that's not a voting bloc, right? There's no advantage if you're a politician to identifying with this group. They're not going to rally around you because you're a none of the above.
Many studies say that the religiously unaffiliated voters don't vote. I don't know that that's true. I think that you're not voting for someone just because they're a certain religion generally. I don't think that's your total.
But there's a comfort
but
level.
We're talking Christian or unaffiliated, but I mean, as Sumaya represents, there's a lot of other religions beside Christianity.
Well, exactly. And I think with the other communities, such as the Muslims, the Hindus, the Buddhists, et cetera, a lot of them are immigrants, and they don't know the system. And when we look at the second generation, third generation, where they have grown up here, they know the political system, they know what's at stake, we are seeing more and more engagement in terms of the U.S. Congress, we have two Muslim congressmen. And in the state level, there is a legislator in Minnesota who just got sworn in this week who happens to be of Somali background and a Muslim as well. So we're seeing a lot of movement, but it will take a while. Now, the other thing, too, is when we look at our Georgia legislators and we look at their, you know, information, they tell you what church they go to. And I always wondered, what does that have to do with anything? Mm-hmm. Back to what Kathy said, you know, you are there for people, all the people, not just people of your faith tradition or of your church.
And it's also, I'm sorry.
All due respect, if you're religious, you still believe in institutions. Once you let go of religion, you don't take institutions that seriously. So that's one key reason why people who are very secular no longer believe in the system enough as to go to the polls.
I also think that people vote in their own congressperson. They say they want to throw people out, but incumbents keep getting reelected. It's never my congressman is bad, it's everybody else's. So the same people get reelected.
Yeah, everybody hates Congress except for their own congressperson.
Right.
Yeah, that is quite true and backed up by solid polling. In any case, all right, let's move on to another fairly controversial subject. During this week's Sugar Bowl game, that was between Oklahoma and Auburn, there was a different kind of chant. Okay, that is the sound of people in the stands chanting, "He hits women." The "he" in that phrase is Sooners running back Joe Mixon. He hit a female student, leaving her with a number of broken bones. That happened in 2014 during Monday's game. Players also motioned the crowd to get louder, which was kind of a surprise. So what do we make of this? And what do we think is motivating that kind of protest? Is it effective to stand in the stands and chant like that?
Yes.
I think it was effective.
Yes.
I think everybody all over the internet, this was a Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
A lot of people watching. People heard it. People saw what happened. And then people saw it on Facebook and the internet.
But what do we think was the point of that protest?
The NCAA, the NFL are not doing a darn thing about this. They're ineffective. So there should be a zero tolerance.
About domestic violence.
Yes. There should be a zero tolerance policy for this, period.
I totally agree with Hector. He needs to be called out, and he needs to pay the price.
What does paying the price mean?
Well,
to you?
He did have a year off or whatever, but the team Oklahoma Sooners said, "Oh, that was his punishment. That's it." My question is, why wasn't he just thrown off the team at that point?
He should have.
He should have, yeah.
The video's really shocking. I mean, this isn't like, you know, a minor hit.
I mean, the video of him hitting the student.
Yeah, I mean, she goes down it's like a ton of bricks, and she had four bones broken in her face.
The first time we've seen something like this, though.
But it was, for some reason, this was especially brutal and shocking. I think it's interesting that Joe Mixon has just announced last night that he's going to declare for the NFL draft. And it will be interesting to watch the draft to see if, you know, is this enough of a PR nightmare to discourage teams from going for him? Or are we in a place where that doesn't even matter as long as you're a good football player?
I bet not. I bet he will still go high.
And that's very sickening.
Well, is it possible that we're getting chance in the stands because people don't feel that the sports organizations are doing enough?
I believe so.
I mean, let's be honest. They're also trying to tweak a guy on the opposite team. But I think that video was so shocking, I can see why the chant broke out.
It would be interesting to see if it happens again as these other teams. There are other players that the same thing could be said of them. So.
You look at the video, there's no sense of hesitation at all when this guy hits, you know, the girl, the woman. And it's ridiculous. I mean, this is an individual that doesn't even question the notion of hitting a woman.
Okay, well, before we end today, we'll talk about another very different but also serious subject. We do want to advise listeners about the possibility of snow and ice for this weekend, especially for the Atlanta metro area and North Georgia. We could see between 2 and 4 inches of snow in parts of North Georgia and around the city. The state is advising people to stay home.
This city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean?
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Okay. That's a joke.
That's actually what it was last
No, night. Atlanta can't handle the snow. That is the truth.
Okay, so there's two things going, well, there's a number of things going on here, right? It's like, how much do we trust the forecast? Because last time we weren't expecting snow. But I think the larger issue is, do we think Georgia and Atlanta in particular learned something from the disaster last time?
Yeah, they're brining the roads ahead of time, which they didn't do last time. I think if anything, there's a bit of an overreaction. I mean, my daughter's school closes at noon today, and it's nothing's going to be falling before, you know, at least 4 o'clock. So it's a bit weird. That said, will I go out in this weather? Oh, no. And I'll tell you why. On our street, last time we had a snowstorm, I couldn't even count the number of cars that went careening all across the street, smashing into other parked cars. People don't know how to drive in this weather, and you're taking your life in your hands to go out in it.
You know, this is a day that I dread the rest of the year because we live in a house that has almost a vertical driveway. Ooh. And so we just worry about that snow day or that ice day for the rest of the year.
So you have a choice of either trying to get up that driveway or staying on the street where the people on Natalie's road will run into your car.
We'll leave the car in the street and we'll try to slide down with the top of the garbage can.
Try to grab it as you go by. Okay, so Georgia Department of Transportation says it has 55 plows, salt trucks, and other snow removal equipment, plus 10 brine trucks. To me, after seeing what happened 3 years ago, that is not nearly enough. They're supposed to also, I remember, have agreements with other jurisdictions to come in and help. But if the whole North Georgia is getting this, then where are these people coming in from? Are they coming in from Alabama? There's also supposed to be snow there. So
Florida?
I'm staying home.
It's the connector. They're all
They got to come in from North Carolina or something.
Hector, do you think that they're ready?
Nah, I don't think they're ready. You stay at home, you open a good book, you have a cup
bottle
of
wine.
Hot cocoa.
Okay.
And then you
In addition to not eating meat, Hector also
you
does
can,
not drink.
You can have cocoa. I'll have a glass of red wine.
You let the rest of the world, you know, fall apart. People did not learn a thing. Politicians pretended like they learned a little bit. So they're going to fake it, but who knows?
Robbie Medwed tweets, the folks stuck for 14 hours in their cars last time are probably fine with being overly cautious today.
Right. He's got a point.
Okay, but the other thing, the other question, of course, I asked whether the city is ready, and the other question is, did Georgia drivers learn anything?
No.
No, not even close.
They never learn anything.
No, I mean, I've always said that the people of Atlanta are among the nicest people you meet, generally speaking, until they get behind the wheel of a
That's
car.
That's actually throwing really true. Absolutely. That is painfully true.
No turn signals.
Okay. Georgians can't drive very well in the rain, so when you've got ice
and the rain.
Ice, no, it's
and
true.
The rain.
It's true. So forget about ice and snow.
There's been some pretty dangerous driving that I've seen.
So my question is,
in dry, sunny weather.
What happens if this kind of situation happens when we've got the Super Bowl?
Oh, no.
It did once.
And what happened? But we weren't supposed
and
to get,
we
the, Super
get
Bowl
the Super Bowl again.
Bowl
again for a very
and
long
now,
time.
Here we are going to have one. It's
half
just,
of the people in Georgia wouldn't get a license in New York.
Again, complaints to Hector Fernandez at Hector.com. You can find an extended forecast online at gpbnews.org. We have lots of good programs here on GPB Radio that you can while away your time with. Also, you can check out GPB TV. There's great programming there as well, but do stay safe. Everyone, are you guys all basically planning to get off the roads and stay at home?
Yep.
Yes.
Is that the plan?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay, fair enough. Listeners, let's put that out to you. What do you plan to do? How will you stay safe during the predicted snow? And do you think we have learned anything from last time? We are out of time for the break room, so I want to say thanks to all my guests, Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, where all the complaints go, Sumaya Khalifa of Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta, Natalie Pavelski of Cater Communications, and former journalist former NPR correspondent and current journalist. Sorry, Kathy Lohr. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
That's our show for today and for the week. Be sure to let us know how you plan to get through the bad weather of the weekend. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great and safe weekend.